Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So PJ, what's your last book?
Well, being obsessed with Alice, I had to read this here. I'm showing it to you. Automated Alice. Oh. Now, Automated Alice is a trequel to the two books of Alice, and it's written by Jeff Noon in, I believe, 1998, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a trequel? Well, no, what's that?
It's a 1996 book, excuse me. A trequel is basically just a kind of fancy word for a third book. So not a
right,
sequel,
okay.
But kind of a, yeah. Kind
of ah, right, okay. You were getting too hipster for me there.
I was getting very
an old man.
It's an old man soul in a young man's body. That's what you are. And basically, Jeff Noon is kind of like this young Brit pop kind of author from the 90s. So he's kind of postmodern. You know, he's a bit of a hipster himself, I suppose. So, but anyway, so Jeff Noon, who's largely based in Manchester most of his life, wrote a series of kind of science fiction novels, kind of postmodern science fiction novels. First one being Vort, and the next one being Poland in the 90s. And then he decided to write the third book to that series while also making it the third book for the Alice books series. So he kind of decided to link his own kind of universe to the Alice in Wonderland universe. And he wrote this book, which is basically supposed to have been written at 1890 by a dying Lewis Carroll, who's just kind of like mourning the days of hanging around with Alice at the Thames Bank, you know.
Okay.
And basically, I think I'm getting very awkward here because I just, you know, because whenever I think about Lewis Carroll and, so Lewis Carroll, did he fancy the little girl Alice? I don't know. That's a creepy subject for another time for a horror show.
Right.
But that's why I was kind of like, yeah, where's it going? Was that anyway? We won't go down there. We won't go down that rabbit hole. Tell you that. We're just going to say that it's pretty awesome. It's actually this time she goes through the clock's workings. So I really like it. It's actually Alice visiting her uncle and aunt, and the parrots of the uncle and aunt flies into the clockwork. It's kind of left open, but as soon as she goes inside the clockwork, she climbs up and up, and all of a sudden she is in 1998.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so she's moved up. So it's kind of crazy, yeah. So she's moved to Manchester of 1998. And it's basically not even a sort of modern Manchester. It's kind of like a parallel Manchester where everyone's infected by a disease where they are half human, half animal, or half human, half object. And basically, she's carried a doll with her that she calls, she doesn't call it Alice. She calls it Celia. But actually, they're the same letters, just put into different places. So Alice, okay. Celia. And the doll in this parallel universe in 1998 has actually become a live sort of kind of robotic being. Basically an automated Alice. And she kind of has a soul because there are termites in her brain making her active. It's a very surreal novel. All right. And that's the whole point of it. I have to say, Jeff Noon, if anything, did a fantastic job of replicating Lewis Carroll's language, because he has a very distinguished, distinctive style of reading, a distinctive style of writing. So it was just amazing, I have to say. It's stuff like, you know, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, cried Alice, whatever shall I do? Great aunt is early for my lesson. I really must find Whippoorwill, the parrot. He must be around somewhere. And so Alice climbed up the pendulum even further until, with a sudden ellipsis, dot, dot, dot. Alice vanished. Now, I don't know if you have ever vanished, but if you have, you will know it can be quite a fearsome experience. And that's a very Lewis Carroll style of writing. And I have to say, I really love this book. It's basically set in chapters that are that goes clockwise. So there are 12 chapters. And yeah, it's just, it ends with 12 o'clock. And it's just basically her trying to find the parrot and trying to find Celia, who disappears, and trying to find, for some bizarre reason, she's trying to find the last puzzle pieces to her puzzle. So there are 12 pieces. For some reason, she's obsessed with that. And that's kind of similar to Lewis Carroll in the sense of, like, why is this? It's kind of absurd. Like, why would this girl obsess about that? But she does ultimately want to return to 1860 to her lesson because she thinks she's going to be late to her lesson. So, again, it's a bit of a parallel to the white rabbit saying, she's going to be late to her lesson. There are constant references to both Alice books. But I have to say, the more further on it goes, the more Jeff Noon language appears, more than Lewis Carroll, and he's making a conscious shift to a more modern language. And Alice starts to talk like a modern person, and even the writing style becomes different. And it's really surreal, including scenes like being swallowed by a huge snake, and then landing on an office with a perfect man, giving her the choice of entering three doors. To three different Manchesters. It's mad, right? It's just mad. I don't need to like go too much into the plot detail because it's so detailed. But it's great. May I even say, very controversially, I might have even enjoyed it even more than the original.
Really?
Books. Yeah. So this is a really good book, which some people don't expect, right? When you use, like, it's kind of like fan fiction, you know. Why would you write why would you just take someone else's universe and then whatever, and then turn in your own thing? Now, I have to say, the best sequence in the book for me, because it's the most philosophical sequence, is when the author Jeff Noon himself appears in the book. And that's truly postmodernist.
Okay, that's very strange.
People don't usually like that. I get a lot of people saying, oh, they don't like when, because it's been done by Paul Auster, for example. Like a few postmodernist authors, guys, 80s onwards, they kind of started doing that. But I thought he did it very subtly and very beautifully, because he doesn't call himself Jeff Noon, but he clearly is Jeff Noon, because he plays around with the idea of his surname being Noon. So his name is in the book Zenith O'Clock.
Right.
Or Zenith O'Clock. And it's just basically, it's got one of the most beautiful phrases ever, I think. It's just basically, it's 12 o'clock in the universe, and it's the only moment of peace in the whole story. So it's like very chaotic the whole time. And it's just, he just appears for a second, and he says, let's have a look here. He just gives her courage and just says, come on, Alice, everything's going to be okay. And then the quote is, Alice wanted to ask what he meant. But just then, the town hall clock reached the 12th of its slowed-down ding-dongs, and the writer's hand came down to stroke once again on Alice's pinafored shoulder. It was noon. It was the very softest of touches, the breath of friendship amid strangers, and then he was gone. And I just want to finish that the next chapter is actually Alice has to look up herself in the library and has to read her own story in order to find the missing clue to.
So we're getting very meta.
Very meta. So I'm going to leave it as that, guys, but read it. It deserves more praise. Jeff Noon's Ultimated Alice. And it actually plays around with the concept of who is the real Alice, which gets confusing. Is it Celia or is it Alice? Because they think they might have confused their bodies. So the puppet starts to think she's the real one, or Alice starts to think she might be robotic. So it's great.
Before I get on to my last book, PJ, we've got a serious problem. When people go to patreon.com/booksboys, they're paying to get not only our bonus shows, but they're paying to get this show early. And that's the Bufanda Boys. You get the show a day early. And in that early recording, we re-record the show word for word in the past, and we wear scarves. But PJ, you're wearing a scarf right now.
Oh no! Are we
think not doing the I think we're swindling people. I don't know what's happening here.
They'll need their half pennies back because I'm wearing a scarf. Actually, I'm wearing. Oh well, this sounds a bit seductive. Make sure to cover your children's ears. But I'm wearing very little. I'm wearing just underpants and a scarf.
So, oh, okay, well, I can only see your upper body, so we're okay. Yeah. I think.
It's my new look, Dean. Have you noticed that in the Yang morning meditation? It's just shirtless, kind of. Yeah. I've gotten some feedback about that where I should wear a t-shirt. I'm just kind of
okay. Confused. You got feedback to put more clothes on. you're like a kind of you're now repelling clothes. Like it's physically impossible for you to put them on now. Like you know you just. But guys, we actually had a comment on social media. Someone contacted. I asked what people's favorite Jane Austen book was because, as you know, on the previous few episodes, I've been reviewing some, and I'm going to pick that up again next month.
I just want to say I love your reviews of books lately. The ones I've been watching. They're on TikTok and YouTube, right?
I mean, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. They're everywhere.
I've been watching them on YouTube.
I'm a social media little millennial guru now. I know all the things. I'm twerking really and everything, you know.
I really appreciate that doing that for us. Thanks first of all, I want to say to you.
No worries.
For the great job you've done for both of us. Thanks, man.
So I asked someone, I mean, we did a poll and we've decided I've got two Jane Austens to do and I'm only going to do one of them next month. Not Emma, but Mansfield Park. But I asked what people's favorite was from the ones we'd already reviewed. And the Historian Chronicles on Instagram said their favorite was actually Persuasion. That's the one that I reviewed last month and I did not like. That's my least favorite.
Right.
But their reason is, I'll read it here. It's only two sentences. The book falls into a more mature stage of her writing. It was probably meant to be longer. We do know that it was never completed. It was published, you know, posthumously. But it's more mature writing. The characters are moving from the initial tropes of Pride and Prejudice and Sensibility. You know, where they're all quite similar characters. Now the main characters are older and she reaches the reader having already found herself as a person. And that is something that really only happens in Persuasion, to be fair. Captain Wentworth and Anne's 8 years of mutual affection shows not only a very interesting dynamic, but a more dedicated step into the changing mentalities of the 19th century. I mean, nothing that's said there is untrue. I just found it to be the most boring of the books so far, but... You know, Northanger Abbey is still my favorite, but we'll do Mansfield Park next month and we'll see. So we're going to take a quick 30-second break and we're going to have an ad for another great podcast.
Ever wonder where Disney got his inspiration for Snow White? Or why Hans Christian Andersen decided to write The Little Mermaid? Then join me, Jessica Clinch, on the Forgotten Origins podcast, where I discover the grisly truth behind the forgotten origins of fairy tales.
Okay, and before I review my last book, PJ, I don't know if you remember, I told you this last month, I did an Odyssey review. That's coming out in the middle of August. It was a crossover with the Well That Aged Well history podcast, 45 or so minutes, where we review just specifically Homer's Odyssey. So that's going to be out, and again you'll get it first on Patreon, but it will be put up for free on the main feed as well. So PJ, my last book, I went for more Galdós, more Benito Pérez Galdós, Misericordia. I should say it's not a long book, it's only about less than 300 pages. I haven't finished this. I've got about 30 pages to finish tomorrow, but I've read enough to review. Certainly, I enjoyed it more than Trafalgar, let's say that. I liked it, but I didn't love it. You've got a little bit of that Dickens world, you know, with the poverty, that Flaubert kind of style. I don't know. I read it in Spanish, and I mean, I read all the Zafón books in Spanish, and I didn't struggle at all. I find it very hard to focus on this book. I don't know if the language was a little bit older, or, I mean, one thing I didn't like, there's not a lot of dialogue. There's a lot of narrative. And if you remember from my Gulliver Travels review a few months ago, that's something I find quite tedious, lots of narrative. I prefer to skim the narrative and focus on dialogue. So I think I find that quite difficult. But it is a good book. You know, Misericordia means mercy, and that's a pun because it's about showing mercy, but also the Mercy Hospital in Madrid. So it is set in Madrid. And so Benin is the main character, and she's a servant for Doña Paca. Have you read this one, by the way?
Yes, yes. I really enjoyed this one. So, yeah, so we can talk about this one
together.
I mean, this one was a requirement for school, but I even read it before because I'm a big fan of Galdós, but I understand what you're going for. You say first what you think of it.
I want to say I did like it. I don't want to give the impression that I didn't like it. I just didn't love it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I just need more dialogue. I think that's the only thing. I skim, even in authors that I like, such as Dickens, I tend to skim the narrative and look for dialogue. But yeah, I mean, look, Benita's going around, she's meeting people in the street, she's helping people, she's a kind soul, she's doing kind deeds for people, even though she's poor. And her mistress, Doña Paca, who, you know, maybe used to be rich, is also now poor. So she's begging, you know, alms in the street, but not actually telling her kind of boss that that's what she's doing. She's saying that the money comes from a reverend, essentially. And but she invents this fake kind of minister who's giving the money, you know, and who's maintaining them. And some of the people she speaks to, you know, there's this one guy who's trying to tell her that everything will be sorted through some kind of magical, mysterious means and the king under the earth and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, we also have the African guy who loves her, even though she's like double or triple his age and wants to bring her back to Africa, where his family are apparently wealthy.
Oh, yeah, right.
So there's all that kind of stuff going on as well. And she's like, look, I'm basically your granny here. Like, I'm not going to run away with you. And, you know, she doesn't want to, she wants to let him down slowly and all that kind of stuff's going on. You know, and then all of a sudden, the fake reverend that she invents actually materializes and tells Doña Paca, well, no, we do have money. I've got someone's, you know, left you an annuity or an inheritance, something like that. You do have a lot of money now. But there's this sadness, this Flaubertian sadness, or maybe Balzacian sadness, you know. It's sad what happens to Benina, because, you know, she doesn't really... So far, and again, I haven't quite finished it, but it doesn't look like she's going down for a happy ending here, you know? And that's sad.
Well, it is very sad. And asking for alms, pedir limosna in Spanish, is the phrase that I most clearly remember, because it just repeats itself so
it's in
often
there a lot, yeah. But without a license, begging without a license. I mean, how irresponsible.
Exactly.
You starving people, get the paperwork in order, you know?
Or at least read some Benito Pérez Galdós.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it that she eventually gets in legal trouble for begging without a license, you know, and loses her position. It's insane.
Look, I have to say this, first of all, to put into context, this is a late novel of Benito Pérez Galdós. Trafalgar was more of a young, immature novel, I would say, as well. And basically, he's really getting into naturalism, guys. So naturalism is the next step from realism, where naturalism's actually criticized realists for not being realistic enough. I know it's a bit ironic, but naturalists are basically trying to describe the natural state of things, which is quite gruesome, because realists are more concerned about portraying a society as if it were a portrait, but nevertheless kind of embellish certain things and tend not to focus too much on the very, very low or marginalized classes. So Benito Pérez Galdós starts doing this when he reads Émile Zola, who's kind of the father of naturalism.
Mm-hmm.
And this, like, in the late... late 1880s, but more like 1890s, and Benito Pérez Galdós, who was a big fan of Balzac, uses a lot of humor in his early novels, just like Balzac. He doesn't really get too much into the Balzac sadness. I feel like Balzac has both, but the Balzac sadness and that gritty Zola hyperrealism or naturalism gets into his later novels, and he starts becoming more of a student of Zola. And he starts talking more about really sort of marginalized people, really tragic in a gritty sense, because when he started writing, they were more tragic in a romantic sense. Now, I have to say, I prefer his early romantic novels, which there's not Trafalgar. It's for example, Marianella and Doña Perfecta. Those are the novels you should look out for. Shorts.
Yeah, I need to get Doña Perfecta.
And they've got very unrealistic settings. Like, I don't mean unrealistic settings. They've got very kind of not too kind of, what's the word? They're not really too typical settings. Like Marianella is set in the countryside and it's idyllic, but, and she's kind of helping a blind man and they're in love. But when the blind man begins to see again after an operation, love breaks down because Marianella is not very pretty. That's more of a romantic story I love. So I just want to say, go for those notes. But I enjoyed Misericordia, but I agree with you. It's not quite as gripping, maybe even as Père Goriot, which is also very sad and realist. But that's,
am I going to get more dialogue in Doña Perfecta? Or
you will love Doña Perfecta. It's exactly the kind of thing you would enjoy.
Yeah? Okay.
And well,
I was going to move on to our. Go ahead.
You can also get Misericordia. I think it's just called Mercy. And there's one edition in English.
Well, read it in Spanish. You know, don't make it too easy for them. We're teaching them about books, but we don't have to be easy.
So you have to read in Spanish as well. Okay.
Because why? I said at the beginning, I'm getting better at reading. I've almost learned all the letters. But if you do it in English, it's too easy. You do it in Spanish, boom, you've got like N's with accents and everything. You know, don't make it too easy. They learn the letters and suddenly there's more, you know, don't make it too easy for them.
Exactly.
But we're going to move on to our recommendations. But just a second. I think I hear the phone ringing for a second time.
What?
So PJ, if you just bear with me, I'll be back in 10 minutes. I'm going to see who's on the line. Get yourself a cup of tea.
Okay. Yeah, I will. Yeah.
Hey, so we have a call live in on the show. Why don't you tell us who you are and we'll see what we can ask you.
Hello, my name is Reverend Alicia Pitts. I am a 5-time author, Christian speaker, and mentor, and always like to tell people this: many gifts, but much responsibility.
Many gifts, but much responsibility.
Yes.
That sounds about right. And how do you cope with that responsibility? You just do your best?
I do my best, manage my time. And I always say it like this: when you do what you can, God can do what you can't do.
Okay, fair. So how long have you been a pastor?
I've been a pastor since 2003.
And the books that you've written, are they all during that time?
No, it's different spans. And actually, the last three books that I've written are within the last 2 years.
Right. So you're getting more into it at the moment. Is that a plan that you have going forward, just to keep writing a bit more nowadays?
Yes. What ended up happening, I had wrote two books previously, over a decade or so ago, actually almost about 20 years ago. And then what ended up happening, the book that I've written in 2018 was Let It Go For Your Sake, Forgive. There's Another Way to Live, Keep Going Back to Love. And that book came out of a conversation. It was birthed out of a conversation. I was an adjunct professor of a leadership institute, and the chancellor of the school, she said, "You're always talking about forgiveness. Why not write about it?" And so that's how the book, Let It Go For Your Sake, Forgive, came into play.
Mm-hmm. That was the one that I'd seen, you know, online, and the one that kind of got me interested in speaking to you.
Correct.
So, I mean, give us a, obviously without going into too much detail about the book, because we want people to read it, but give us a brief kind of synopsis. I mean, what's the benefits for ourselves of, you know, of letting things go and of offering that forgiveness?
Well, it's for your sake that you let it go, right? You have people that are holding on to things for 20 and 30 years, and there comes a point in your life where you have to move from being a victim to a victor.
And would you say that's, you know, more important or equally important as, you know, letting it go for the sake of maybe the person that you're not forgiving? You know, do you think that it affects both people, or?
More than likely it does affect both people, but even if it doesn't affect the offender, it is for your sake that you let it go. I like to say it like this, because sometimes people have done things to you, but they're not studying you. They're sleeping at night and you all discombobulated and all, you know, upheavaled in your feelings. So this is why you have to let it go. It's not even about you even really focusing on the other person at that point.
Yeah, the other person might have completely moved on a long time ago, and you're the one with that pent up emotion. Yeah, that's a fair point. And are you working on anything at the moment?
Not currently. Actually, I'm working on an online course that will be coupled with the forgiveness book. As I told you, within this last year, I dropped two books. My most recent book is called Memoirs of a Pastor: The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I'm not perfect. I'm only human. It is a very inspirational book, and there are many nuggets and many takeaways that you can take from my memories or my process of different times in my life when it comes to that book. Let me put it this way. God told me to start with the bad are things that I had no control over. The ugly is decisions that I've made in my life. And then the good is where I am right now.
Okay, so it's kind of your journey from that starting point to where you've got to.
Yes.
Very good. And let's ask a question to go a little bit away from your own works, but I ask this to everyone we interview. Obviously, most of us have dealt now with almost a year of kind of lockdown. Have you increased what you've been reading yourself? Have you done some reading in the last year?
Yes, I'm constantly reading. I'm a bona fide teacher anyway, so I love to learn. I love to read. So I read all different kinds of commentary, different kinds of devotions, things of that nature.
Awesome. And there's one question that I love to ask everyone. If there's one work that you could have written, one classic work that you could have written, can be anything, can be a novel, can be a nonfiction, can be whatever you want, textbook, anything. There's one thing that you know that's always had an impact on you and you wish, I wish I had written that. What would that be?
Well, the truth of the matter is there's really no new information. And Dr. Miles Monroe, he says it best. He says there's no new information. It's just a different experience, right? Like my forgiveness book. There's plenty of forgiveness books out there. People, those forgiveness books just doesn't have my experience. So I really can't even answer that for you at this point.
I caught you off guard with that, but no,
Well,
you
you know what?
make
Actually, it just came to me. I would say a poetry book.
Really?
Yes, because I do write poetry as well.
Okay. We my co-host PJ, now he's actually a poet and he writes a lot of poetry and he's trying to look into getting some of it published. So that's quite a good coincidence. Do
Okay.
you have a poem? I mean, I haven't asked you to prepare this, but do you have one ready that you could read for us?
If you give me one brief second, I
I
can pull
can
it up
indeed.
right quick. Let's see. Okay, so this, just to show you how long ago it's been since I've written something sooner than this, but this is an old poem. I wrote this poem at this time. I actually was an evangelist at this time, back on December 29th, 2004. And it's called Crossroads. And it says, everyone comes to a crossroad in his or her life, especially those who live in the nightlife. You feel like a rat trapped in a corner, unlike the nursery rhyme of Little Jack Horner. A decision has to be made, whether good or bad. The results of your decision can make you happy or sad. Within yourself, you already know what to do. Follow your conscience. Therein is your breakthrough. Choose you this day whom you will serve. The flesh doesn't want you to observe. This is the Lord's doing. Can't you hear him speaking? He can fill the void and the peace that you're seeking. It's in your mind and it's in your heart. Depart from iniquity and he will give you a brand new start. The wages of sin is death. It is God who gives us breath. But the gift of God is eternal life. No more envy and strife and being a lowlife. We can accomplish this through Jesus Christ our Lord. Put on the whole armor and take up your sword, which is the word of God. Our feet must be shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. It is God who gives the increase. I personally have this testimony. I've been down this road, believe you me. I decided to make Jesus my only choice, Thank God I recognized his voice. Keep in mind, this is only the beginning. If you're on the Lord's side, you're in the winning. You have to be filled with the Holy Ghost. The blood of Jesus has been marked on my doorpost. The devil is going to attack. I'm going to keep it real. If you have the Holy Ghost, then you have been sealed. This road, the straight and narrow, is not easy. The adversary doesn't fight fair, and he's very sneaky. But we are more than conquerors through Christ Jesus, our Lord. God doesn't hold our record of wrongs anymore. I'm on the right road now. I know that I can make it anyhow. If you're on the wrong road, get on the right path so you can avoid God's wrath. Crossroads.
Good, get on the right path. There's a line I really liked. I guess a little bit near the beginning, maybe about a third in. Follow your conscience. Therein lies the breakthrough. I like
yes. That. Yes.
Very good.
Yeah, so that was back in 2004.
I didn't know about you, that you were a poet.
Say that again.
I didn't realize that you were a poet, so that was lovely to lovely to find out.
That's why I said many gifts, much responsibility.
And you do some radio work as well, is that right?
Yes, I do. I actually am a radio host on Ascend FM Radio, where I have my own radio show called Live Inspired. I also have my own podcast show, which is called AP Live, which is my first and last name initial, AP Live, Live Inspired.
Cool. There's links to that stuff on your website. And most importantly, for our purposes, if anyone's interested in buying the books as well, they can get all that on your website, aliciapitts.com, which I'll put a link to in the show notes as well. Well, it has been absolutely lovely having you on. And I hope that we get some people interested in the book, because it seems like something that I think we can all benefit from. I'll give it a read myself once it arrives, because I'm very interested in seeing how, you know, forgiveness in particular can actually help not just the person that I'm forgiving, but actually to cleanse my own soul, as it were, you know, to ease the burden from myself. So I think it's a really interesting perspective, and I can't wait to read it.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for this space and opportunity. The Lord bless and keep you is my prayer.
Have a great day.
All right, nice you to too. Talk to you. Blessings to you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, wow. So the author, the Reverend Alicia Pitts, calling in to talk about her book, Learn How to Apologize. So that's an interesting kind of life lesson, just improving your own life by learning actually how to apologize and show empathy for others. In a brief interview there. You can find her at aliciapitts.com, but I'm going to spell it for you because I've never seen Alicia spelled this way in my life. A-L-E-E-C-H-E-A-P-I-T-T-S. Alicia Pitts. I've never seen Alicia spelled that way. So just to make sure that you get it right if you want to look her up or order her book, aliciapitts.com. So we chatted with her there just about her books, and you can certainly check those out. I think we're gonna move on to our recommendations just to wrap things up. What I'm going to do is we'll do our Guilty Pleasure book, because that's back. Then we'll do your recommendation, and then we'll do my recommendation to close.
Awesome.
So my Guilty Pleasure book, and again, I want to clarify this because, you know, we haven't done it for a month or two. So anyone who's aware, these are great books. That's not meant to be a negative thing. That's just, I'm always reading classic literature, you know, I'm forcing myself to read like in Spanish and everything, you know? So sometimes you just want something lighthearted and fun. And that's my guilty pleasure, you know, something enjoyable, a page turner. And we've got B.A. Paris. We've talked about her before. Behind Closed Doors. So last time I talked about The Breakdown, this is her first book, and I think it's her masterpiece from the two or three that I've read. Behind Closed Doors. So we've got Jack and Grace. Jack, handsome, dedicated lawyer, loving husband. Grace, elegant, consummate housewife, prisoner. So what we have is the perfect couple, but it's the perfect lie. So actually, it's not what you think. Grace is actually a prisoner. She's actually captive to Jack. And Jack's this charming... This is 2016, by the way. Jack's this charming guy that everyone likes. And he meets Grace, who is kind of low self-esteem. And they get married very quickly. Whirlwind romance rushes her away. And all of a sudden... You know, well, how come Grace has to use Jack's email address and isn't allowed her own mobile phone and never goes anywhere without Jack? And then we find that it's very controlling and he's a horrible, manipulative person. But also Grace has a sister, a disabled or a sort of a special needs sister who is going to move in with them soon. And then it gets really sinister because the sister says Jack's a bad man and something's not right here. Mm-hmm. And Grace is trying to teach her, no, it's all going to be okay. And soon you're going to move in with us. But then she discovers that Jack is not just, you know, not just mistreating her or keeping her prisoner, but actually essentially wants to torture them. And he wants to really, really horribly mistreat her sister. And it's really quite tense and very difficult to deal with mm-hmm. sometimes when you're reading this book, actually. You know, some of the themes. It's a thriller, you know, and you want to see what the hell is going to happen next and how it's going to end. And although it's, you know, 300 or 400 pages, you will read it in 2 days, 3 days, because it's 350 pages, you know, and there's just a bit at the end. And this quote kind of won't make any sense if you haven't read it. But basically, they find out that the room, they keep telling, the way they figure it out is something's not right with what Jack's saying. Because he keeps her essentially locked in a room, but he has like a fake bedroom. So the guests all see this lovely bedroom, but she's not really in that room, you know? Mm-hmm. And it turns out that he's going to do the same thing with the sister. So he tells all these stories about like this yellow bedroom and how Millie wants to live in this yellow bedroom. Mm-hmm. And then someone says, hold on. Earlier, he said that the room was going to be red. And they find this horrible red dungeon.
Oh, no.
And then they say, and then that's how they figure it out. You know, they say, what color was Millie's room? And she says, it was red. And then they kind of realize everything that what's going on. I'm not going to spoil like how they get there and all the twists and turns and all the events, but it's a real page turner. And I actually feel uncomfortable almost talking about some of the themes in it just now. But it's a good book. You know, it is a good book. So that's my guilty pleasure. PJ, what is your recommendation for the month?
My recommendation is to keep it Spanish. I thought I'd mention one of another great author around the time of Benito Pérez Galdós. So he came a bit later. His name was Miguel de Unamuno, and he was a philosopher as well as a novelist, an essayist. And his novel that I recommend is very short, so try to get it to practice your Spanish. But it's also in English. It's called San Manuel Bueno Mártir. So San Manuel Good, the Martyr. And all I can say is this is basically about a man who's conflicted, who's basically a priest, and he's basically deciding to continue on with his profession, even though he doesn't believe in God. And it's all about Christian morality. It's all about Christian morality versus not believing in actual God, but trying to like still bring encouragement to the people with Christian morality. So it's kind of like saying that Miguel de Unamuno believes with Christian morality, but he doesn't believe that God has to be in the equation. But nevertheless, he's a bit of a martyr. San Manuel is a martyr because he's still staying in his profession because he knows he can help people, but he doesn't actually believe in God himself.
Okay. Well, before I do my recommendation, I just want to show you this. These are the bookmarks that I got from the reread shop. These are sort of in Galician. So like, I don't know how good your Galician is. Ostinosaurios non lian desaparatheron. So essentially, dinosaurs didn't read, they disappeared. So that's why we should read. And then also, Me Vuelves Lorca, you know, the poet Lorca, Me Vuelves Lorca, you drive me crazy. So cool little bookmark puns, which the chap kindly gave. There's a couple others he gave me, but these are the only two I have to hand. Now, there's a weird coincidence that your recommendation touches on religion, and I swear we didn't plan this, but my recommendation this week, this month, is also a book touching on quite heavily on religion. Now, I'm not going to make any claims here, and I'm not going to sort of choose any sides or anything. I'm just going to mention that this book exists and that I find it a very interesting read. It's Zealot by Reza Aslan. It's a number one New York Times bestseller. It's the life and times of Jesus of Nazareth. Now, it's not approached, you know, from a religious perspective necessarily. It's about looking for the historical Jesus and, you know, comparing him. And they effectively say he was part of the kind of zealot group or not really a movement, but you know, this kind of grew up in, and the thing is, when I studied this, I studied Roman Judea. So that was an interesting backdrop when I read this. It's 300 pages. It's a short book. And I used to read this as bedtime reading to an ex of mine many years ago. You remember that?
I remember that. Along my own copy of Descartes, you read, like, I gave you a treatise of logic, right? And you were reading that as well.
Yes. Is that yours that I have?
Indeed it is, yeah. And you're reading that at bedtime. Is it called a treatise of logic? Am I getting
that? It's a treatise on human nature. Treatise on human nature is not Descartes. That's Hume.
Oh my God.
Did you give me Descartes' Meditations? Did you give me the Meditations on First Philosophy?
Oh my God, I can't believe. No, I gave you Discord on the Method.
Discourse. I don't think I have that one, so I'm not sure. Maybe I give it back
like,
to you.
This sounds like a very hipster conversation.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what's that. And guys, answers on a postcard, P.O. Box, Books Boys, and tell us which book PJ lent me all those years ago. So Zealot, it's interesting. It just chronicles the real, from what evidence we have, Jesus of Nazareth, and from what the Bible's telling us, and obviously we've got other sources like Josephus and everything like that, but we want to look and put Jesus in the kind of society that he was in, based on the other types of religious groups and based on his behavior, the kinds of life he was leading. And I mean, the Zealots were kind of fanatics in a sense, and based on the Bible story, Jesus branded a criminal because he broke some laws. So I don't want to, you know, get into all this on the podcast, but if you have any interest in that type of thing, it's certainly an interesting read. And that's my recommendation for the month. It's very curious that we both picked books touching on religion there. So that is pretty much all we have. We've kept it relatively concise, and we're going to end. I have a question for you, actually. We're going to end. You're just relaxed there. You're very chill. You're very chill on the webcam.
I am very chilled. I was very chilled too.
We're going to close with one of your songs, PJ. Do you want to pick one? Do you have one that you would like me to play?
Actually, I'd like to add to that. I'm always not always very chilled, just always very chilled when I do this podcast, because it's good to be chilled.
Physically chilled with a lack of clothing. You're physically feeling the chill. So.
I was so chilled here that I kind of just can't even repeat that question. So I'm just very chilled here. So.
Yes, we're going to close with one of your songs this month. And I just wondered if you had one in particular that you'd like to play.
One of my own songs.
Yeah, well, we did one of mine last month. So, you know.
One of the songs we play together.
If you want, like whatever you want. You can just do one of your own songs, like whatever, because you sent me some before. What? So it's up to you. Pick a song.
You know, I wouldn't mind the song about my daughter, Feel Good Girl.
Okay. I love that one, actually. And that one's on YouTube as well, guys.
So look it up, Feel Good Girl by...
We can play Feel Good Girl. We can indeed. Did you know that, I don't know if I think I told you this, 3 days or 2 days ago, it was the 6-year anniversary of The Night Hunter.
Oh my God, yes, of course.
We've never played that. We can play it another time if you want to do Feel Good Girl this time.
All right, I'm in conflict now. All right, let's do Feel Good Girl now and let them look forward to The Night Hunter.
You can look forward to The Night Hunter.
Build it up right now.
Can you see the vampire fly up to the pretty angels? I love it. I love it.
Exactly.
But we'll do Feel Good Girl this time. So, guys, that's all we have. We're going to play Feel Good Girl, and then we'll take you out with our outro credits. Do you have any final words, PJ?
I just have final words. Are, guys, just take it nice and easy. You know, life is precious. Read and just meditate and just live. You know, we're always here for you. If you have any questions, if you ever want to chat, if you want to engage, share any thoughts, we're here for you. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
So my final words are, I don't know if this show has actually been concise or not. Once I edit in music and ads and things, I'm worried the show is not really going to be any shorter than any of our previous episodes.
We deviated a lot.
But anyway, guys, we've made it to episode 10. We're in double figures. That's great. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And just, you know, nice. Tell other people to listen. Yeah, that's the best thing that you can do. But if you want our extra shows, you know where to find them. There's tons of stuff. And that's it. So we're going to play Feel Good Girl. Get some reading done, guys. And we'll be back. In about a month.
See ya.
feeling kind of empty inside. You don't know what to do with your body. You gotta go, yeah, you gotta go to the feel-good girl. When you're feeling kind of blue and you're stuck inside, can't get it out, go to the feel-good girl. You know you got it. You got it. Gotta get out of the house, yeah. But if you can't go because of the quarantine, you gotta call the feel-up girl. Yeah, yeah, I feel good. It's alright to be in the dumps. But you gotta go, you gotta go, you gotta go to the feel-good. Ain't no option at all. You gotta go to the feel-good.
Books Boys was presented by The Dean and PJ Burke in association with Thaddeus Penguin Productions. This episode was brought to you by our sponsor,
shortshort.short.
If you would like to get in touch, you can email us at booksboys@hotmail.com or visit us at booksboys.com. The intro uses Driving in the 70s from the Of Soundtracks and Garage Bands EP by Trapdoor. And the outro uses Dog's Light by Bravo Max from the album of the same name. All music used is either Podsafe or used with permission. If you'd like to support the show, click on the Amazon or Audible referral links on booksboys.com or go to patreon.com/booksboys. And get all of the Bufanda Boys bonus shows. Thank you kindly for listening to us. Please tell your friends. And come back next time for another episode of Books Boys. Read some books!
I hope you can cut this part out. Oh, okay. That's a load off my shoulder. Let's see.
Yeah, I will, yeah.
I don't know why I always do a trend.
'Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.